JC2S, Part 2. Number 2A.
So Max brings this point out, we know, very nicely on page 42, still in booklet number 5, Stately Science Not, by showing that the textbook is not written just, for example, in English, but in the language of spirit. The English text is only its surface language, whereas the deep structure language is the language of spirit. Then we go on to see that this language of spirit therefore is presented in the textbook, and Mrs. Eddy said, I hid it and hid it, and if I hide it anymore, nobody's going to find it. We can certainly believe that, can't we? Because on text interpretation, even now that the language of spirit opened up the Bible, we can hardly hear it there. It takes such a quality of tonality of the language of spirit within us to hear that language in the Bible as Dorley heard it. And now we turn to the textbook and see how it takes such a understanding of the tonality of the capitalized terms to hear that language in the textbook. But that's all right. We're discoverers. It's step by step. I guess Mrs. Eddy wrote the textbook in 432 revisions. So we can take 432 years to learn tonality of the synonymous terms. So I figure we needn't worry about it at all. If we hear it, all right. If we don't, all right. We're not going to be discouraged this week if we can't hear every tone of every synonymous term behind theology and medicine. That's not the point. Every thing we do, we know it has that feedback system behind it. Every input has a process, has an output, has a feedback, doesn't it? Every time we do something, we're on a little higher ground. And by doing text interpretation, working with a text that has the deep structure language as its basis, we learn tonality as we go along. We can't help but learn tonality. So just showing here, just to finish page 42, 43 in this booklet I'm reading, Max wants to show then how Mrs. Eddy hid it in the textbook, and yes, we may not find it, but it's in this beautiful symphonic structure. So really, we all have to have this week a consciousness of a conductor, he says. We have to be able to read a score vertically and horizontally. Well, that's always asking a lot, to be a conductor. We're each a conductor. As you will see, I didn't prepare a lecture this week. It may be that we are going to discover this together through a workshop situation where all of us will be our own conductor, beginning to hear that symphonic structure together, working in the workshop of science, huh? In science and understanding, together digging out what is the deep structure language, together helping each other build the tonality of the language so that we get sharper and sharper and sharper on this language of spirit. But we'll have to have the mentality this week, all of us together, not just me, but all of us, working together, thinking together, participating together in this adventure of theology and medicine, having that sense of a conductor, thinking already vertically and horizontally. Max, as we know, presented this so beautifully, and I want to read it. It's something that is, I feel, a masterpiece of putting together how Mrs. Eddy's text is a symphonic structure. So let's us listen to what he says, and it's something we've read, but something we want to just maybe think about again. On page 42, under scientific text interpretation, Max says, I have already pointed out the difference between individually subjective text interpretation, which is not an appropriate method, and scientific interpretation, by which principle interprets itself through and as the system of divine ideas, which is inherent in principle itself. I want to add one other point. It is not an easy one to explain, but I will try to do it as simply as possible. We are used to reading a text from left to right, from the top line downward. We read horizontally in one-dimensional order or in a linear flow. Our whole thinking is trained to reason in a linear way, from one concept to the next. It is like a melody sung by a single voice. If I sing, I can only sing one part. but I think we agree that this melody played by an orchestra of many instruments is something much bigger. All the instrumental parts are played together, but so coordinated that one definite melody can nonetheless be recognized. So the overall theme still runs linearly. But what does the score, the text of the notes, look like? The score, which the conductor reads, shows the linear or horizontal flows of the notes for all the parts. But in addition to this, he has to read vertically at the same time. So a musical score has to be read at one and the same time, both horizontally and vertically. That is to say, symphonically. The textbook is written more like a score than a book. Why? We have seen that we have various categories of metaphysics, and as they are spiritual, they all blend. These categories are not in watertight compartments, but reflect one another infinitely. Just as in music, the category of tones blends with the second category, that of rhythm. However, they do not blend at random, but in a manner specifically adapted to the theme. If various categories blend at the same time, how can they be written so that they can be read simultaneously? In music, a score can do that, but a book? Theoretically, one could write it like a score, but the reader would not understand it. So Mary Baker Eddy had to make a compromise between a score and the usual type of book by intertwining the categories into a consecutive text. Thus we have in the textbook a multidimensional theme written out in a one-dimensional linear text. And it is then up to the student to filter out of a passage which part belongs to one category and which parts to another categories. So the textbook presents its subject as a multidimensional theme in a symphonically linear way. It is like one big symphony for many instruments, with one broad theme running through it, as one big differentiated whole with an inner balance, consistency, or harmony. Isn't that nice? It's a masterpiece. He says here, I will try to do it as simply as possible. It's beautiful, isn't it? So this week, therefore, as I said, I really haven't prepared any lecture. I prepared for the class. I have my notes, of course, but I didn't prepare to come and talk structure, but really as a workshop where we work together, so to speak, work, discover together, certainly not one by themselves or anybody put on the spot, but as a symphonic whole, to discover really in the shop of McDonald Classroom, I guess, through science and understanding the spiritual structure behind now theology and medicine in the sixth chapter. Now we know that this language of spirit is the deep structure language, and in order to do this, it's just going to ask us to go back a little bit to class one, consciousness, to where we learned the compendium study, really as Max presented to us in syllabus one program, I think it was in 1976. And we have those tapes, and we have the booklet with the Syllabus 1 program giving us the compendium method of working, where we have, for example, the ideas of mind. It will demand us just going back to that standpoint and reculturing within us, perhaps during the evenings, how we have gone through the compendiums to learn what the ideas of mind are, to concept build, to learn what mind really means spiritually as intelligence. That intelligence, according to our schoolboy, schoolgirl mentality, means to be smart. But to the divine intelligence means, as we saw in the compendium, to comprehend the interrelationships of all facts so as to guide all activity towards a desired goal. That's what intelligence means in the divine infinite system through the language of spirit. It takes on another meaning. It takes on the meaning of mind and love. Intelligence, as defined in the compendium, has that sense of a holistic consciousness, which is intelligent, which sees the end from the beginning, which is goal causality. Intelligence means to comprehend, the dictionary says, all the interrelations of facts so as to guide all activity towards a desired goal. The goal is always love, isn't it? So intelligence always goes out from the goal, and intelligence guides and leads us towards that goal. That's that mind. That's why we turn to mind. Because we turn to mind because it's only the divine mind, never the human mind, that can perceive the goal. Only the divine mind is intelligent because it knows the goal. It knows the end from the beginning. And it knows that which has to come out of it in our life because it's the mind of Christ. It knows what has to come out right now in our life at a specific moment. So if we pray that that one mind which is God be our mind, we have no other mind than that one all-intelligent mind. That's the most practical thing we can ever know and do. Because when we turn to that all-intelligent mind, we get the vision of what it is that must come out in our life. Nothing else will give us the vision than to turn to mind, to submit ourselves to that all-intelligent mind. And once we have the vision that mind makes known to us of where it is we must go in this life, regardless of whether anyone else knows that we've got to go that way, the things of God are always foolishness to men, to the children, to the husbands, to the wife, to the family, to the bosses, don't always see the vision we see that mind presents to us. And so therefore, that praying that that intelligence, which is our intelligence, then is going to guide and lead us every step of the way. Mind as intelligence not only presents the vision, but that intelligence guides us. What's more practical than turning to that one mind? It's the only source we can turn to tell us what we should do. This we just have learned as one idea under mind in the language of spirit. As we began to concept build with these ideas, we went on to interrelate, to build tonality within mind. We began to see, yes, mind is not only intelligence, but mind is creator, mind is cause, mind is power. And we began to see that that intelligence has power. That intelligence is behind all causative, creative action within the universe. We began to intra-relate all the ideas under mind. And as we interrelated all the ideas under mind, we got a tick, 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 tick. Meaning that all those ideas became the whole greater than the sum of its parts. Because when all ideas interrelate, they give off something that makes the whole greater than the sum of its part. It's the example that Max gives us, isn't it? And perhaps others, that if you have a watch and we take all the watch apart into parts and lay it out on the table, if we put those parts together in any way, we may not get the tick, tick of a watch. But when we put those parts together that belong together within the right category and in the right relationship, then we get the tick. So therefore, all these ideas under mind are mind's ideas. They have mindish tones. They all interrelate. They all have something in common, which is mind. And therefore, that's where we get tonality. First, concept building, learning what the ideas of the synonymous terms are. Then seeing how all the ideas, for example, under mind, interrelate, blend. They cannot stand without each other. They become holistic. They become the whole greater than the sum of its parts. And that suddenly gives off a tick, and that's called mind. So the only way we can get tonality of mind is through the simple way, concept building, interrelating, which builds up tone mind, which gives us mind. The same method for tonality we did then through spirit. We concept build through the ideas of spirit. We interrelated the ideas of spirit until we got a tick, tick, tick called spirit. A tone called spirit. Spirit is just a symbol for that tone. And the only way we get the tone of spirit is through seeing the intra-relationship of the ideas. That gives tone spirit. Then, the same with the others. Soul, we concept build with the ideas of soul. We saw how they had the soulish qualities, how they interrelated. And when they interrelated, they formed the whole greater than the sum of its part, which gave a tick, tick, called soul. So that tone is always the whole, which is greater than the sum of its part. That's why when we go in to text interpretation, we're listening to tones. We're listening to the tone of mind, meaning we're listening to all those ideas under mind, giving off tone mind. And we go into a text and listen for tone spirit and tone soul and tone principle. We're listening for that holistic gestalt tone, which we have learned through concept building and tonality building. But if life was that easy, if the text was just written and interrelating, we'd have life pretty easy. But it doesn't. It's written as a symphonic structure, as a blending. So we see that these ideas not only interrelate within a synonym, but ideas blend with ideas of other synonyms. So as we go into text interpretation, we go on to syllabus 2, as Max gave us, that of blending. To interpret text, we've got to know how to blend. We've got to see then how, for example, an idea of mind as intelligence blends then with the ideas of spirit and the ideas of soul and the ideas of principle and the ideas of life and the ideas of truth and the ideas of love. Therefore, intelligence, to be intelligence, not only has power and cause in mind, but it also has the order of spirit. It also has within itself the purity of spirit. Intelligence also has the definiteness of soul. It also has the ability to translate itself to every situation and uncover ignorance in a situation, soul. It also has the ability to operate and govern a situation, principle. It also has the ability to be always new, always fresh, always appearing in other ways, life. It always has the ability to be the ideal standard of everything to operate intelligently. It always has that sense of fulfillment within for which it came forward, that it always has that sense of love. Intelligence always operates according to a divine principle, love. Life would be easy if the ideas only blended with ideas in the textbook. But she also shows in the textbook that ideas blend with other synonyms. She shows then that the power is intrinsic to mind. She says mind is power. But she also talks about the power of spirit and the power of soul and the power of principle and the power of life and the power of truth and the power of love. And that's where Boston tried to get at John Dorley and says, your study isn't right. You say that these mind has certain ideas that characterize it, and spirit has certain ideas that characterize it, and soul also, but power is for all of them. So it's freely interchangeable, forgetting the meaning of synonymous, that yes, terms are freely interchangeable when they refer to God, but when they refer to the specific offices of God, they are not. There is definite terms for mind, definite terms for spirit, definite terms for soul, principle, life, truth, and love, for example. So what is it when she talks about the power of spirit or the power of soul? Well, for example, we're going to have to be sharp when we go into text interpretation because Mrs. Eddy wrote the textbook for Absolute Christian Science and Christian Science. Yes, we hear the tone of oneness of divine science behind it, but it's really a textbook of Christian Science. Christian Science has two sides of the same coin, Absolute Christian Science and Christian Science. Therefore, the textbook is really, with the overtone of divine principle, love, divine science, is bringing its message out from the standpoint of Absolute Christian Science, having its impact on Christian Science. Therefore, Absolute Christian Science is solving the problem of duality, solving the problems that Christian Science struggles with. So on the Christian Science level, if we're struggling with the question, does matter have power? She always blends an idea of a synonym with other synonyms to offset the belief, for example, that matter has power. So if the question is matter has power, she says, oh, the belief is matter has power. What offsets matter? Spirit. So the only thing that's going to offset the question that matter has power is the power of spirit. So she blends the mind, power, with spirit, to offset that matter has power. So therefore, we will see that when we know our synonym work, that, well, that's right, spirit looks back to mind, and it takes the intelligence of mind, which has power, at the point of spirit, which appears as the faculty of discernment, to see what is real from what is unreal, to see that it's an ideational universe and not a material universe. Therefore, that intelligence of mind has the power at the point of spirit to appear as the strength of discernment, to be able to see that matter doesn't have power, but the power is in spirit. So she will blend ideas with synonymous terms to offset claims. If the belief that body had power, she'd call it the power of soul. Overcomes the belief that body has power. Using the intelligent power of mind to offset the belief that body has power. These things we just listened to in text interpretation. Well, life goes on again, and we see that we have then synonym, blending with synonym. We finally arrive at the deep structure language behind a text. We've come from its surface structure language of its ideas, finally arriving at the blending of capitalized terms. Just continuing to use mind as example. Then for the whole text, the surface language has then been reduced to the language of spirit. To just seeing then behind all what she's trying to say, well, anyhow, there's just the divine mind. And that mind is spirit. And that mind is soul. And that mind is principle. And that mind is life. And that mind is truth. And that mind is love. Giving us then that deep structure language behind the textbook, which appears in a symphonic structure in the textbook. We hear this matrix, all right, yes, that's fine. Not only then do we have mind blending with mind, but then we begin to have mind blending with spirit, mind blending with soul, mind blending with principle, mind blending with life, mind blending with truth, mind blending with love. But in the textbook, it presents a subject from the standpoint not of mind, but also of spirit. So we have them finally arrive at spirit blending with mind, spirit blending with spirit, spirit blending with soul, spirit blending with principle, spirit blending with life, spirit blending with truth, and spirit blending with love. So we can see then that this begins to give us this language of spirit behind the textbook. It's a symphonic language. You see, it's a symphonic, holistic language. It's a language of a seam without rent. That's how the textbook would have been written. Well, who would have been able to read it? Or if we try to help out a little bit and say, well, this is how we present the subject of prayer. This is prayer. How could we read it? And yet it is. It begins to show the subject of prayer and atonement and Eucharist and marriage and Christian Science versus spiritualism. It shows now most of the chapters in the textbook are written in this language of spirit, the symphonic language that we need to read horizontally and vertically. So we see that Mrs. Eddy couldn't write it this way. She had to reduce it down into the text, and it's into the surface language, which may change. That's not the point. If it does change, fine. It helps us just grasp being. But the main thing we get back in our work to always this language of spirit. So as we go through now theology and medicine, yes, we'll look at the surface language, but we'll always take that surface language back to the language of spirit, because that's going to educate us through to the 7,000-year period. Because the 5,000-year period, let's say we work with ideas of divine metaphysics, the 6,000-year period, we begin to see how those ideas are in a system, in a science, in a scientific metaphysics. But then those system of ideas and blending of ideas, we drop at the end of the 6,000-year period, and we have to go into the 7,000-year period of a consciousness of just the tonality of the synonyms. So ideas through concept building in this 5,000-year period, learning the ideas, tonality building, seeing how those ideas through a 6,000-year period consciousness and science and system blend, finally leaving those ideas for the capitalized term. The text helps us do it, doesn't it? So we ought not only learn the synonymous terms this week, but we have an added fun of hearing those synonymous terms bring out this terrific subject of science, theology, and medicine. And we just feel so privileged, don't we, that we today are able to grasp science, the science of God, through the language of mind and the language of spirit and the language of soul and the language of principle, as we did last year. And now to be so privileged to grasp the language of theology from the language of life, that language of spirit called life. No, who on earth today can knows theology from that language of life itself, from the ever newness of life, from the spontaneity of life, that we are that living principle love in consciousness? That's church, having nothing to do with organization, thank goodness. And how we can learn what true medicine is through the language of spirit of truth. That truth is the only remedy. That truth, through the medicine of mind, through the ideas of mind, heals false beliefs. And when mind's ideas heal false beliefs, it heals the physical. Because the physical is just the objectification of false beliefs. Mrs. Eddy shows that the physical is not something per se. Matter only exists as a false concept. Matter is spirit misunderstood. So if we have a false physical claim, she shows in this chapter on medicine, that the language of spirit, the language of God, translated to the language of ideas, those language of ideas heal those false beliefs first in mentality. And when it heals the false beliefs in mentality, it heals the physical, because the physical are just false beliefs objectified. So naturally, she'll say that we can't heal the physical by a drug. That's no remedy. How can a drug heal a false belief? If the physical is just a false belief objectified, a drug doesn't heal a false belief. Only an idea can heal a false belief, which heals the physical.